Welcome to this latest edition of The Delivery Prophet, brought to you by TheDelivery.World together with Avico. This episode is being recorded at the bustling Northern Restaurant and Bar Show in Manchester and not in our usual BrewDog podcast studio in Waterloo. We're so grateful for all of you out there who tune in regularly for this podcast. Without you, we're just a bunch of guys and gals talking to each other in a recording studio. I'm Peter Backman, and today, together with John Borzacchiello and our special guest Mark Murphy, as usual, we'll talk about delivery in general and ways to make it accessible and hopefully profitable. And no doubt we'll get on to other topics too, as we try to get a deep understanding of the forces shaping this rapidly evolving sector. But before that we get on to that, John, as I said before, we're in Manchester at the Northern Restaurant and Bar Show. How are you finding it?
It's great to be out of London. We've done all of these so far in London, and to come up to the northwest of England in Manchester. Yesterday we did the show here. Fantastic. One of the busiest shows I've been to for a long time. And it's great to talk to operators up here, because it's a very different scenario, as you're aware, to London, and that central London piece especially, of not just Manchester, but also the Leeds, the Liverpools. And I'm glad we've got this show on the road.
I think it's going to be exciting. Absolutely.
It's different,
I agree.
Isn't it? Although we look out the windows now and it's not, but it's been raining up here like it has been in London for 6 months now.
Absolutely. And it's not only in Manchester and London, but talking to people around the world, it seems to be a feature of life. And I just want to pick you up on one point you made. You said we've recorded all in Waterloo BrewDog podcast studio, but we've actually recorded in Indianapolis as well, so I don't want that to go missing.
I was in America last year, and yeah. Pete, did you say you're doing your trip to America this year as well?
Yes, I am.
How long are you over for?
This time it's going to be 3 to 4 weeks.
So you'll get to see some really good new trends then, bring them back with you.
Hopefully.
And we can discuss them on a podcast.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Look forward to it.
So I think with that, it's right to get the show on the road. So let me set the scene with some thoughts that I prepared earlier. If you're McDonald's or KFC, it's easy to get noticed. Your stores are ubiquitous and give out messages about you and your product around the world all the time. You have super strength advertising and marketing budgets, which, among other things in the delivery space, get your name right at the top of the list. You get noticed. Customers know what you stand for, and you get orders. But if you're not McDonald's, or you're not KFC, or one of the other restaurant giants, what happens? Well, it's difficult, but maybe there are ways to do it. It seems to me that you have to try harder. Perhaps you can make your offer different, but that's a challenge on a delivery app. Or you can get your name higher up the listing, but that's as expensive. You can provide excellent product, imaginatively packaged, perhaps with a small extra, a free pack of hand wipes, or maybe a small snack from a local supplier who is eager for the publicity and will therefore provide the product at a cut-down price. You can play to your strengths. Perhaps you're local. Perhaps people know you because they have friends who have already bought one, or hopefully more, of your meals, and then they tell everybody they meet about it. Make it easy for your customers to post your meals on Instagram, and your staff can be amongst your greatest ambassadors. Encourage them to say how great you are. And always be thinking of ways to get customers to come back for more. A customer who knows what they're getting will be much easier and cheaper to persuade to buy again. Although you may be smaller than the giants, you are nimble, you're creative, and you have strength. Find them and use them. So, John, what do you think?
From that, Peter, I take two things. Firstly, we're going to talk about what let's call the smaller operators. So I came across, probably 4 years ago now, a great little brand called White Men Can't Jerk. Two guys set up. They have a spot in a pub in London. They do markets. And they do, for me, probably one of the best jerk chickens there is, and the sauces. But how do they get bigger? They've tried. They've done different markets. They've done different residencies. But without that financial backing, they can't get bigger, can they? How do you get from that stage without putting someone funding it for you, without getting an investor in? Very difficult for a pair of just normal guys to go forward. But then I get to your point where you said around giving the consumer something different. And the point of difference is you want to connect with them. You want to send them offers. But this comes back to many a times we've spoke about this. And Cherie, actually, from Buns at Home, picked this up amazingly, is the operator doesn't own the customer. The aggregator does. So Cherie was saying how she wants to send offers out to the people that are having Buns at Home, but she can't because they don't own that customer. So they can't get their message across. They can't get to that customer because the Deliveroos, the Uber Eats of this world and other aggregators own that customer's data and don't share it with the operators. So for them to connect through delivery is very difficult. Yes, of course, if they have stalls, they can pass that message. But how does an operator that does mainly delivery or delivery connect with that customer if it's through an aggregator? Really difficult. And hopefully, maybe our guest will be able to help us with that comment.
I hope so. And I think that's one of the essential issues that we always try to get to the bottom of when we talk, because it's a perennial one.
Definitely. Who owns the customer? It comes up in probably every podcast.
Yep.
And we know from the operators, yes, they service them and they give the food, but it's actually the aggregator that has all the data.
Okay. So you've mentioned a guest, and it's probably time to introduce him formally. So Mark Murphy started off his working life as an equity analyst in the banking sector. He is the founder and CEO of Burgerism, which he founded in 2018. And the company is based here in the northwest of England and likes to describe itself as the Domino's for burgers, offering a restaurant quality made-to-order burger for delivery or collection. So I think I'll allow Mark to talk about that when time comes during our discussion. I've got a sort of starting question for Mark, which we often ask our guests, and that's, what's in your background that got you into delivery? What made you change from banking to delivery?
Yeah, good question. Good point, Cyrus. So I came at it very much from the point of view of a big picture analysis, thinking delivery was big, but getting an awful lot bigger. So I was looking at it from the point of view of almost an investor, with Deliveroo about to come out to the public market and Just Eat having been in the market for a while. And the thing that struck me, while there was a lot of growth in the space, there wasn't that many brands who were specifically dedicated to delivery, certainly when it came to restaurant quality food. But Just Eat was full of your kind of mom and pop takeaway style operators, and then Deliveroo managed to bring a lot of the restaurant world into delivery. But a lot of the restaurants were doing delivery as an afterthought. And if the restaurant got too busy on a Saturday night, weren't terribly interested in servicing delivery man. So I thought, well, it's clear there's a demand for that delivery type brands, but it was also clear there wasn't enough operators who were really focused on that delivery piece. So it was a huge transition for me to move from that world of banking into the very hands-on world of hospitality. But I think it's kind of been a blessing more than a curse, because you come in with no preconceived notions. So you really get into the nitty-gritty of, as a customer, why would I order from that brand? But as a team member, why would I want to work for that brand? And I do think hospitality is an industry that can be slow moving. We can be a little bit slow to move away from convention or the tradition, which in certain circumstances is a good thing. However, when you're looking at a brand name's delivery, probably not as favorable a trait. So, from London, I moved to Manchester, and you touched on some points there around how would a brand today gain traction in the midst of a McDonald's and a KFC world.
Yeah, it'd be really great if we can sort of explore that a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any initial views on what we've said?
Well, first off, there's no kind of magic wand. And if I had the answer, I think I'd be worth an awful lot more money than I am.
And you wouldn't be telling us anyway.
But what struck me when you mentioned that is, if I was asked to start Burgerism today in the UK, I'm not sure I'd have that much confidence in going about it. In 2018, when we started Burgerism, the reason I moved from London to Manchester was because we worked very closely with Uber Eats and we got access to a lot of their data. And in their view, the London market was not saturated, but much more competitive. Whereas when we came up to Manchester, we found 10 restaurants on the Uber Eats app. It's quite phenomenal, really. So we launched Burgerism. We were number 11. And it's not that difficult to scroll 1 to 11 on a marketplace. But today, and this is where I'd be slow to start a Burgerism perhaps today, is there's hundreds in Manchester, hundreds of restaurants. And it's really, really difficult to stand out. And then we've had the advent of virtual restaurants. Now, we started as a virtual restaurant, and in some respects still are, so nothing against them. But it could be that a physical location is offering 6 to 10 brands on top of their core brand. So it's a very busy marketplace. And equally, there's an awful lot of brands that are coming and going in the virtual space. So therefore, some of those virtual brands that don't really have to maintain the quality, they can come in, see if it works, try out a few things to gain some customers, and then maybe try to improve it. But if it's not working, they'll just close off that virtual brand. They'll close it from the kitchen. So, I think the tactics today are much more important. I think back in 2018, it was really a matter of just getting live in the marketplace. And Uber Eats was really delighted to have us as a dedicated operator who also wanted to do something better quality. They found it a little bit difficult to get some of the restaurants on the marketplace in Manchester. But you mentioned a list of things, you know, a set list of tactics, perhaps. And actually, a lot of them are really on point. I think it's very easy when you move into the online space to treat it as an entirely kind of transactional thing. And that probably is what happens most of the time. But when you include some human elements, that really, it surprises and delights perhaps. And the customer is kind of takes, the customer is more likely to take note, to think a bit more deeply about the brand.
Yes, this picks up a point actually that I think we've sort of touched on before, John, and that is all about the way that you can sort of try to replicate a restaurant experience in a paper bag.
Mark was saying, Peter, before we started, we were having a conversation actually about dish humor and the unboxing of a gift at Christmas, that actually it's an experience at home that you can have in a restaurant. And like you were saying, the same with Burgerism, it's actually doesn't just come in a little paper bag. You're giving an experience, the consumer.
Yeah, 100%. And I think in that respect, that's where we do see it as kind of in that e-commerce world, you get an awful lot of really great packaging, and it's the packaging is the first thing that the customer connects with. It's much like when you go to a restaurant, if you're greeted positively, you're more likely to have a good experience. We focused on the packaging from day one, and when we didn't have the scale and we couldn't get everything printed, we used to hand stamp or hand write. We still hand write Enjoy in every box. But when a customer receives that package, we're off to good stars. But when they open it up, and they gradually unbox and they work their way through it, the customer is sort of compelled to capture it on their phone, whether it's through video or photo. But that then leads to huge word of mouth. But it's kind of that online word of mouth or social proof through Instagram primarily, I guess. And that's been huge for us. And we still, you know, we think about that all the time. And one of the most unique things that we have done in the packaging respect is we include a drinks coaster with every order where they've ordered a drink. So 70% of our orders are meals. The majority are ordering a drink. And that coast, one of our teams actually designed. So on one side, it's kind of the Burgerism branding. And on the other side, it's a portion of a map of Manchester. And if you collect all 12 of those coasters, which you can do over time, you build out a kind of Burgerism style map of Manchester, which we think is really cool. But it is coming back to your point about how do you kind of recreate a special sort of atmosphere? How do you connect with the customer who's sitting at home? I think it's those little touches that go.
It's interesting, Mike, because you say customer, consumer, is it your customer or is it the aggregator's customer?
So first off, we call our customers fans because they feel more like fans than customers, actually.
Cool. That's
really, really cool. We often get a fan who might message, say, absolutely love Burgerism, the last 10 times I've ordered, I've been amazed. Just wanted to say the last time I ordered, forgot X or Y. I didn't want to leave you a bad review because you don't deserve that. I feel like, wow, how on our side are these people? But to your point about data, I think, look, it's a difficult one. No doubt we don't have as much access to the customer as we'd like. However, if I'm ordering for delivery and I haven't seen the brand before, on the platform, the first thing I'll do is go to their Instagram. Nowadays, you might go to their TikTok even. So you can really get a sense of the brand. And if you kind of like what you see, number one, you might follow them. Number two, you might order from them. So I think there's an onus on the brand to think about outside of the delivery marketplace, how can you connect customers? And we've done a great job of that. I think I would say the vast majority of people who order from us on Deliveroo or Uber Eats, we've got a lot of points of contact. I think the other aspect, though, is that, and I think the marketplaces are keenly aware of this, you know, food delivery marketplaces are 80-20, so 80% of the volume goes to the top 20% of brands. And the top 20% of those brands are, I don't think, becoming less powerful. I think they're becoming more powerful in the context of the aggregated. I think as delivery's gotten bigger, these brands are beginning to realize they can shift customers. So if they move between marketplaces, they'll bring a lot of customers with them. And equally, they kind of are starting to realize that perhaps they can start servicing demand direct. So maybe that's through an online ordering, platform, which enables them to take orders for collection, but also perhaps they can start doing their own direct deliveries. And there's an awful lot of software these days allowing restaurants to service delivery direct through kind of a white label delivery fleet.
Do you think that the ability of the larger players to do those sort of things puts you at an increasingly competitive disadvantage? And I guess the question then is, what do you do about it? But does it put you at a disadvantage?
For burgerism, I don't think... Well, the first thing I'd say is, with respect to burgerism, nationally, we're not a big player, but in Manchester, we're a big player. And I think our strategy, very much about saturating our home markets rather than planting flags. So in the context of Manchester, for example, on Deliveroo, we're the most trending, most popular dish for the last 3 years running. So I know we have a lot of sway in the city of Manchester, both with marketplace, but with customers. So I think we could easily recreate what a big brand might be able to do nationally. We could recreate that or challenge that within the city of Manchester. And actually, I feel it's a big opportunity for us, because I think as those bigger brands get a bit more aggressive, often the biggest lever that Deliveroo or Uber Eats has is commission. And those big brands putting commissions means that Deliveroo probably wants to push orders to other brands. So if they're only getting 10 to 15% off a big player, well, maybe they'd prefer to get 20 to 30% off a less big player. I think the marketplaces, I mean, one thing I'd say is they're heavily distorted. There's kind of an invisible hand. And I don't think that's always good practice, but I guess the marketplace kind of have to make their profit too. But I think there's a big opportunity for us to take advantage of the tech evolutions, perhaps, in the delivery space. So for me to be able to fill orders direct is interesting. It's not necessarily new. I mean, Domino's has kind of been doing that for decades. But it's a very difficult operation to run on top of running a kind of restaurant quality kitchen. But I think as we've scaled up and figured out our operation, now I think we feel more confident about tacking on. When we started out, we were all in on delivery. And then what we started to realize was, you mentioned word of mouth earlier, Peter. Word of mouth became huge for us. If you didn't live in our delivery radius, you couldn't get burgers. And that did seem a bit crazy. And one of our kitchens was well suited to offering kind of a drive-to format of collection. And we just opened it up, and very quickly we started to grow that channel. As we've kind of matured, I'd say our split is about 65% delivery, 35% collection, which is really strong. And if you think about the absolute, the kind of margin or the profit that you get from those channels, I mean, 35% on collection, probably more profitable than 65% on delivery. So it's a little bit frustrating, but I guess you kind of accept that the blend overall is pretty strong, it's pretty compelling.
Having the balance, because it gives you flexibility should conditions change, it gives you flexibility as well.
Yep.
An issue that I sort of struggle with is it better to be really focused on delivery? Does that give you the opportunity to, I'm going to say milk, but to take out all the bits of it that you possibly can? Whereas if you're running delivery alongside your restaurant activity, well, it doesn't get the same focus of attention. And I wonder whether, if you were offering advice, would you say to people, just do delivery and collection, or run a restaurant as well? I'm I'm interested to know how that plays out in practice.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think something we think about quite a lot from an identity point of view in particular, in the consumer's mind, are we something that you enjoy at home, or are we something that you go to the restaurant experience? We've just learned from our customer. One of our fans asked me once, I bumped into him on the street and he said, are you ever going to open up a restaurant? I said, we don't plan to. He said, great, because I want to eat it on my couch. So that tells me that there's different occasions in hospitality that we need to kind of stick to our lane. I think if someone was to ask me, I'd probably suggest to one or the other. I don't think, and I mean, it's pretty clear. There's a lot of burger brands established before burgerism. They're very much in on the kind of premium sort of fast casual burger experience that you'd enjoy in the restaurant setting. They haven't grown their delivery volume to what you've managed to do without that. It tells me that if you really optimize for delivery, it doesn't just help your margin, but it actually helps it optimizes the customer experience too. So I think for restaurants that are very high end and very much about coming into the setting and enjoying the experience, the service, I'd be really, really slow to tamper with that through delivery.
So there isn't a simple answer to the question.
No.
It depends where you are, who you are, what you're doing, and all sorts of other things as well.
It's interesting, Peter, as well, isn't it? I'll just sit here listening to Mark around burgerism and the guy eating it on his couches. And we know, we've spoke about this brand before, but Byron had 70 sites at one point. The guys are down to 10 now. And that tells you that actually it's a pure burger restaurant, something that could work. Domino's haven't opened restaurants to dine in. They're very good at what they do. Papa John's are very good at what they do. But these are guys where you can eat it on your couch at home. And what you're saying is, that's the way burgerism's going, and you're saturating that Manchester market. You're not thinking, oh, where can I go next? Let's go to this. But you are the kings of Manchester.
Mm. Yeah. Not big fans of royalty here, but it's quite good to be the kings.
We're here in Manchester, and a great vote of thanks to the whole Avico team who have created a special studio for us to record the delivery profits from the National Restaurant and Bar Show. So thank you to the Avico team. And if you're enjoying the show, please consider supporting us by leaving a 5-star rating on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. Your ratings and reviews mean the world to us and help more people discover our content. Plus, it's the best way to show your appreciation for the hard work that the Delivery.World team, the Avico team, and our fabulous guests put into each and every episode. So go ahead, hit that 5-star button. There are full instructions in the show notes, and let's continue with today's fantastic episode. So, Mark, we've talked about how to structure your business to take most advantage of delivery in very general terms, but I'm wondering about some of the finer detail of doing delivery well. And you were talking earlier about packaging. Do you work with packaging companies to get there? Do they give you advice based on experience of talking to other people, or is it effectively burgerism specifying what you should be doing? I'm interested.
Good question. I think I mentioned earlier that we've done everything from first principles, and probably what surprised me at times is the lack of advice from suppliers. I think we've had to figure things out and then ask suppliers, could they adapt? Certainly within the packaging domain, we get an awful lot of people getting in touch saying, you know, who makes your packaging? How do you do it? Blah, blah, blah. And if I gave them the names of the people who supply the packaging, I'm not really giving away a huge amount. So we've spent a lot of time designing and thinking about our packaging at a very detailed level. And then we go to the different suppliers and say, can you design this? Can you build this? And when you get to scale, they usually can. They can usually help you out. And we really appreciate that. And that dynamic works great for us. But I haven't really been met with a huge amount of consulting advice as such when it comes to packaging.
Also, this brilliant idea of the 12 coasters that build up into a map of Manchester. What happens when your customers have got all 12, then what do you do? Are you working on another one?
So we actually do reward customers who get to 12, and we've had an awful lot of customers reach that milestone, if you will. So there's a couple of different things we do. So we ask them to DM us through Instagram first off, kind of take a photo of the fully built map. And then in exchange, we'll either send them kind of a framed picture of all of the coasters within kind of a picture frame. Another thing we've done is we got Ravensburger to actually mock up the map in a jigsaw. So we have fully a Burgerism Manchester map jigsaws, which I think is pretty cool. And in general, it's just like a really nice touch point. There was a really nice story of a woman who got in touch. She'd ordered from our Gatley store, and her child had autism, and her child was really looking forward to building out the map of Manchester and built out all 12. But she got in touch because the dog had kind of gotten to grips with the map. The child was distraught, and she'd asked, you know, is there any way we could put together 12 for her son, I think it was. And we were more than delighted to do that. But yeah, the maps is a good example. That's an idea which very much we developed in-house.
I think you'll find everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people will be doing it, having listened to this on the show today.
It's a really good way, isn't it, to interact with your customers. And a lot of guests that have been on before have said about they don't have contact with theirs. But again, thinking, because you're a delivery-only brand, you're not competing in that space of, we're going to need to make sure our restaurants are running, we've got the staff in there. You've, like you say, you've got your team that are Manchester-based, and that also must come with its advantages of, if a site is short, that it's very interchangeable, and you can do different things with team members and the progression within your business as well, because they can get promoted and visit other delivery only sites. It's not bricks and mortar.
Yep.
But do you miss customers? It's an interesting one.
If I say no, there's something wrong with me. Put it this way, we attract a different type of team member to, you know, your typical restaurant environment. Our team, you know, are very pleased to meet customers when they do come down to collect. But they don't have to service those customers in the same way that you might have to service someone who's coming in for a 3-course meal. So they actually quite enjoy the dynamic that for the most part, you're kind of behind a wall or a hatch, and that the culture and the atmosphere as a result within our teams is really high energy, really fast paced, but also very fun and very together. And I'm glad you brought up team, because team's probably the thing that I've enjoyed figuring out the most. It's the aspect of the business that's very enjoyable when you get a rise. An awful lot of operators today would say people's probably their biggest challenge. I would say our biggest challenge is actually tech, and I think that's probably because we're in a kind of more of a fulfillment space and delivery rather than a table service space. And I think we've managed to attract more of a kind of maybe a less traditional hospitality worker, maybe more someone who enjoys the speed of what we do. We've got a really young team as well, and that has kind of translated into that sort of atmosphere that I talk about. But in terms of progression, that's huge for us. I think about motivation a lot. I think, you know, there's three things you need to do to provide a motivating environment. If you're going in to make burgers every day or serve customers every day, you got to think about how do you design that environment to be as motivating as possible. So there's three elements. For me, the first thing is to provide autonomy. I think if you're kind of helicopter parenting, team members are not really going to enjoy that. Second thing is to allow them to be masters, to become excellent at their job, so provide great training. The third thing is to provide purpose. And purpose, sometimes people might say, but how do you provide purpose in that sort of routine environment? There's an awful lot of ways to provide purpose, whether it's finding them that, you know, we're the top 10 burger in Britain, according to the Times, or whether it's that we're the kind of highest volume burger brand in Manchester. But it also is more kind of direct stuff, like there's people coming to work with a very clear purpose to, you know, maybe get a little bit of extra income in their pocket if they're a student, or maybe it's someone who is looking to build their career and they want to develop through the company. John also talked about the idea of being, you know, in Manchester and how that supports progression. I mean, it's easier from an ops point of view too, because we can visit all of our stores in kind of a half hour drive. But I looked a lot at a lot of the US operators. So In-N-Out Burger is a great case study in the US. They were very slow to expand, even though their stores were always at capacity. And the main kind of barrier to expansion was having the next GM ready. So they would train a GM, or they'd hire just a regular team member in one store, and over time that person would become very motivated by the environment and would want to progress to management level. And if the management team in the support office thought that that person was ready, then they'd start to look for a store for that person. So when they opened the next in and out, they'd have ready-made general manager who could come across and bring almost that exact same operational excellence into the new store and same culture and ethos. And that's what we've been able to do in Manchester. So our forthcoming opening in East Manchester is going to be run by an assistant manager from our sales manager. And actually, she started out just as a team member and she progressed to that role. And now we're delighted to be able to offer this sort of general manager role to her. So progression, I think, is a huge part of motivation as well. I think if you don't see a path forward, it can start to become a little bit stifling.
You've been talking about people, which is probably the most important thing in this whole delivery bit. It's certainly the most important thing in running a restaurant that serves dine-in customers. And it seems to me that if you don't get the people bit right, you're going to be performing below par. So it's one of those bricks in the wall of making it running a successful delivery business. And there are loads of others, but you can't ignore people. And it needs people like you, I suggest, Mark, who've naturally got that. I can't imagine why you became a banking analyst.
Do you know what the Peter Mark said about his team right on? Enjoy. Enjoy. Such a simple word, but it means something. Handwritten. If you're in a restaurant, you could be served by the best waiter, waitress, team member, manager, and you get that rapport with them. You build it up. We've all been there where you've had such great service, but because you're a delivery-only brand, that word enjoy is doing exactly what this lady gentleman's done for an hour and a half serving you. With putting one word on, such a personal touch. I love that.
Yeah, and I think it's also a reminder to our team every time we write enjoy in the box, the person behind the sorter. It can be very easy in a digital world to forget that. But yeah, I mean, it was a huge shift to come from the culture of London banking to go into kind of hospitality. And the thing, you know, you're right, Peter, because I found that previous atmosphere to be quite sterile in many ways. There's really only one purpose for nearly 90%, maybe 100% of bankers, which is to make money. Whereas when you go into hospitality, it's an awful lot more varied. And the thing that probably gives me purpose as the founder, while I enjoy the kind of, you know, customer attraction and those sorts of things, I actually love to see the team progression. And I love to see people thriving in the environment that we've built. And I do really believe that, you know, there's a challenge on all businesses, but in particular the hospitality space, to create an environment that is progressive, create an environment that people can build careers in. And, you know, the US has shown us that time and time again. There's so many brands that, you know, people have been enabled to have phenomenal careers at some of these quick service restaurants in the US. And that's what I think we should strive to do in the UK. And I think Burgerism has an opportunity to become one of the leading QSRs in the UK and UK built QSR.
Do you actually have formal plans to expand the business right now?
So there's a very good quote I read recently from the founder of Liquid Death, and he said that it's very easy to scale a brand overnight, you know, especially with the advent of digital, but it's very difficult to scale an operation overnight. Well, it's impossible to scale an operation overnight. Even, you know, in his domain, which is more about distribution of cans of water, it's really difficult because he's still relying on people to make all of those things happen. And at Burgerism, the reason we haven't reached 100 restaurants is because to scale to 100 restaurants, you need 100 amazing teams. The first thing we had to do is to figure out the chemistry of an amazing team. We've kind of been figuring that out. And as we've scaled, then we've, you know, I mentioned there earlier about bringing people from one store to the next as a kind of a way to upkeep our culture and our standards. And that took us a few years to figure that out. So we're at the point now where we're kind of on the cusp of 6 sites. I think scale's coming more quickly, more rapidly than previous, but you know, progress typically does compound. And I think there's an opportunity for Burgers and to easily reach 100 sites or more. I think, you know, we talk about Domino's a lot, obviously, as an operation primarily, but they're at 1,250 sites in the UK and Ireland. That probably tells you about the total capacity for a delivery burger brand such as Burgerism. Burgers are the most delivered thing in the UK now ahead of pizza. And that wasn't the way probably up until about 5 years ago. So there's a big opportunity, there's no doubt. I think we'll probably make it work if we manage to keep a hold of our culture and our kind of people standards. Because yes, I think the rest will follow.
I mean, you just mentioned culture just then, and that goes back to our earlier point.
Yeah.
Without a culture, you've just got a transactional business that goes by the rule book. And there are some businesses who've grown on that basis. But
to get to scale, though, you have to franchise, ultimately. To get to a big, big scalable number, Mark, you by yourself, you can't do it with your team. However, it's impossible to keep a culture in a franchise. All of a sudden then, it's built beyond what your beliefs, the team's beliefs, the people, the culture. When does it become, I guess, not to lose culture, but to have them saturated in Liverpool, saturated in Nottingham, but you guys can do it? When does it take that step, I guess?
We were approached by a really big franchisor, probably the biggest in the UK last year. And we never really said yes or no, but we had a good few conversations with them. And when I look at the brands they've worked with, there's evidence that perhaps they can make it work. There's also evidence to suggest that maybe they don't care as much as the brand about the brands as we would like. My view on franchising is it's a bit of a dirty word, or it's become a bit of a dirty word. I do think there's another way to do it, and we're probably going to launch it later this year. We're still kind of formulating what it looks like. I'm kind of loosely calling it ownership for the fans. So I'm a big believer, as you've probably figured out, in empowering people in their kind of work life. And I'm a big believer in entrepreneurship, obviously. That's kind of the step I've taken, and I've found it hugely fulfilling. But I think there's a way for us to empower brilliant hospitality workers to run their own restaurants. And we'd probably see that happening in kind of a JV type structure where Burgerism maybe owns part of that company and the GM of that restaurant owns another stake.
It's a real great vision. We're the delivery prophets, so maybe we should have a go at some sort of prophecy. What thoughts would you have, Mark, on the future of delivery? Do you think it's going to continue in the current direction, or is there going to be some sort of change because of all the issues that are building up of the profitability, of a lack of transparency and so on? Is it going to carry on, or is there a disjuncture?
Overall, I think the future is bright for delivery. I still see it as a growth area. However, I think there's huge tension within it. Tension between riders, tension between marketplaces, restaurants and customers. I don't think we've figured out equilibrium, and I'm not seeing enough from the marketplaces to strive toward that. Deliveroo and Uber Eats listing going public, or Uber going public, has put an emphasis on profitability over customer experience, over restaurant experience, over rider experience. So I don't know if we've arrived at the final destination. I think there's an evolution to come. I think it will be healthy. My fear is we don't get there quickly enough and we start to reduce the size of the delivery market in the UK. I think, look, the reality is if enough customers have bad experiences, they're less likely to order for delivery. Maybe they start ordering more for collection, which is a good thing. Maybe they start to go back to restaurants more progressively than delivery. But I think ultimately, a lot of the leading players in delivery will get bigger. I think they'll probably start to redesign their operation if they haven't already. Perhaps there's more of an in-house environment and more of an explicit sort of delivery environment. And maybe as part of that redesign, you're going to have more restaurants running fleets. I don't think they will do it in the same kind of vein as Domino's, but there's a lot of white label delivery fleets now to tap into. And I think, I think Burgerism will kind of slot in quite nicely in that respect as kind of a very delivery focused operator, looking for a very high sort of customer experience and theme experience within it.
That's really helpful and insightful view of the future. So let's come back in 10 years' time and work out whether you're right or not. I think you will be. But is there anything that we've been discussing that you feel you would like to say, perhaps about yourself or Burgerism, that you haven't said before?
Yeah, probably. Look, I'd probably say I'm very passionate about what we do. I'm very passionate about making delivery and collection better. I think it's been remarkable to me to see just how many people are prepared to collect great food. And I think it does come back to a great product. I think you mentioned earlier, word of mouth is the most powerful form of marketing. So we want every customer to have a great experience. If they do, they're going to tell their friends, they're going to tell their family. Equally, we want every team member to have a great experience at Burgerism, because what happens at Burgerism is most of our URs come from referrals, which is a great testament to what we do. I think the other interesting aspect of delivery, and maybe a slightly more stealth trend, is the advent of suburban over urban. So, you know, typically delivery is all about finding highest density areas. But actually, when you go into suburbs, you find a lot of underserviced areas. And there is a new level of demand that wasn't there pre-pandemic, probably. So I think there's a big opportunity for operators like Burgerism to continue to expand through suburban areas. I don't think we're looking for premium real estate. And I think when you get into those suburban areas, there's a lot of nice things happen. You start to connect a lot more deeply with the community. You also kind of build a team from the community too. And there is an opportunity perhaps to kind of reinvent takeaway. Takeaway is something that people in the UK in particular love. And there's a lot of like very old mom and pop takeaway brands, operators, which have stood the test of time. But I think there's an evolution perhaps to a more modern form of takeaway.
That's fantastic.
So what's going to have to happen now is our listeners going to have to come to Manchester to experience it. Because we're sitting here,
well,
Mick, you're London, I'm the Midlands. But for our listeners, we've got three of the Avico marketeers sat in the corner of the room. They're from Manchester. These boys get Burgerism delivered to Avico's office. And we were talking about it before because they all know about it. But actually, when you're not in this area, you can't get it. So actually, you're creating demand, Mark, through saturating Manchester.
Yeah. So that leads me on to my final question to Mark is, so how can people find out more about Burgerism? Where do they go?
So the best way to understand our brand is through our social channels, the TikTok and Instagram. I actually quite enjoy both of those channels. I think, you know, you look at what you have versus what you don't have sometimes as a brand. And what we do have is the opportunity to connect really deeply with our brands through that authentic voice that we have that a lot of big corporations can't really have. So we kind of like to let people into behind the scenes at Burgerism, get tremendous engagement through that. So I think that's probably the best way to understand and connect with Burgerism. Obviously, if you go onto our website, you're going to see where we're located.
And your website, the address of your website is?
Burgerism.co.uk.
Couldn't be easier.
Yep. I know what I'm having for lunch. I'm in Manchester.
So I think that's leading us to John and me to give a big thank you to our fantastic guest, Mark Murphy, for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. So, Mark, all the very best. And here's a reminder that whether you're a delivery company, a marketplace app, a technology company, a restaurant owner, an investor, or simply someone who loves to order takeout, the Delivery Profits is the perfect way to stay informed and ahead of the curve in the world of food delivery. You'll find the Delivery Profits on Spotify, Apple, or on the other places where you get your podcast. And please support the show by leaving your 5-star rating. Your ratings and reviews help more people discover our content. And there's more at www.thedelivery.world/thedeliveryprofit. Tune in to the next edition of The Delivery Profits for the insights, interviews, and analysis that will keep you ahead of the game in this exciting and ever-evolving industry. And with that, it's goodbye from today's Delivery Profits. That's Mark and John and me. Goodbye.